Week after week, we hear about suspects slipping through the cracks. We hear about leads that aren't followed. We hear about cases that become cold even though it doesn't seem they should. If there were only an independent group that could come in to save the day, kind of like the Justice League. Well, a group now exists to do just that. And you hear from its Batman today. I'm Ed Densel, and this is Unfound. Life imitates art, art imitates life. And it's sometimes hard to determine which is which. Do our phones just happen to look like Star Trek tri-recorders, or did engineers rip off that sci-fi series? Did grunge music come about because there was a shift in musical taste, or did people's taste shift due to the music? Who knows? These are the thoughts that came to mind as I talked to Detective Kenneth Maines, founder and president of ASOC, the American Investigative Society of Cold Cases. Although I didn't ask him explicitly, I wonder if he took his cues from the Justice League, the Fantastic Four, the Avengers, the X-Men, the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, all fictional groups made up of the best and brightest, people with special powers who, assemble to fight the evils of the Earth, the universe, and other dimensions. Because that's what Detective Maines has done. Since 2013, he has brought together an impressive group of people who I'm sure you've heard of, with the intention of getting these special people to look at cold cases as a group instead of individually. It's such a great idea, it's a wonder it hasn't been done before. Because within art, the idea has been there for a long time.
I'm so happy to have on this episode of Unfound Detective Kenneth Maines, president and founder of the American Investigative Society of Cold Cases. Kenneth, thank you for joining Unfound.
You're welcome. Pleasure to be here.
Kenneth, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and about the organization.
My name's Kenneth Maines. I've been in law enforcement and a detective for about 15 years, and that has included stops as a patrol officer, a task force officer with the FBI, a detective working cold cases with the district attorney's office. And I currently do that in addition to being in charge of our undercover narcotics unit for the county in Pennsylvania.
And how did this organization, why did you think it needed to be started, and how did you put it all together?
The American Investigative Society of Cold Cases, it got started in 2013 when I was working a cold case of my own. It was the murder of Gail Matthews, who was 23, and her five-year-old daughter, Tamara Burkheiser. They were murdered September 1st, 1994, at 812 Center Street in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. And I got that cold case, and I've been working on that for 9 years currently, but at the time I had gotten about 6 months into it and I got stuck. And I've never gotten stuck in a case before, and it was a very heart-wrenching moment for me. And I was looking for somewhere to turn. And where do you go? Where do detectives go when they get stumped? I know one thing that wasn't going to happen was I wasn't going to put that case back in a drawer where it had been and remain cold. So I started looking for people to reach out to, and I found out there was very few. So I realized there had to be other detectives that encountered this problem, that I was going to create my own organization, and so no detective ever got stuck again.
So up until that point, you'd been obviously in law enforcement for many years. That's something that never came to your mind, but that was the case that kind of put you on the path to starting this.
Yeah, it wasn't my first cold case, but it was the first cold case where I got stuck. And that put me into the path of, hey, we need an organization in this country to look at cases so that detectives, when they get stumped, they don't just put the case back away and it gets forgotten about. And I wanted a multidisciplinary look at the case. Homicide detectives don't know everything. DNA experts don't know everything. You have to get everybody to look at it through a different vision, through their own eyes, and give you suggestions. And then that way you have all those disciplines looking at it and giving suggestions. And as a detective, that's all you want in a case, is to have another lead.
Speaking of different disciplines, tell the listeners a little bit about the other people besides yourself and their backgrounds, if you could.
Well, I wanted to form the society with members from law enforcement, homicide detectives, behavioral specialists like Mark Safarik, Jim Clemente, both former FBI criminal profilers, Mary Ellen O'Toole, who's also a former FBI behavioral profiler, but also pathologists like Warner Spitz and Cyril Weck, who we have, and DNA experts like Susanna Ryan, and criminologists like Henry Lee, Laura Petler, who does our crime scene stuff, and Bob Kepler, who, you know, he solved the 10 Bundy murder. So, I mean, we just get all the best, and that's what it was like for me. I just started researching who the best was, reading their publications, talking to them, seeing if their vision was the same as mine, and then bringing them on board.
That's an impressive list. I mean, anybody who's into crime or unsolved mysteries or things like that, they're going to recognize the name Cyril Weck, of course, even going way back to the JFK assassination. And then Henry Lee, probably most well-known from the O.J. Simpson case. That's interesting you were be able to get all those people together. I mean, that's like an all-star team, I guess you'd call it, like some sort of superhero team or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I forgot to mention Joe Penda from the Discovery's homicide hunter, great homicide detective. And yeah, it was like they believed in what I was pitching to them. Mm. And that's what brought them on board, I believe. They understood the vision, the passion, and the need to have a cold case unit nationally with big names so we could get cases from law enforcement and solve them.
Right. I mean, now that you're almost 4 years into this, you started this in 2013. It's probably one of those things where people are now saying, now that you know these people, why didn't somebody think of this before? Right.
Well, you know, I know the VDOC Society has been around a long time, and they are similar to us, and they do great things as well. And to me, there can never be enough cold case units to help people.
That is certainly true. So how does it work? You have this organization. You don't go out and look for cases. Law enforcement agencies submit cases to you. Let the listeners know how that all works.
Yeah, how that works is law enforcement, we take cases right now only from law enforcement. The reason being is they have the complete file. That way, as we review the case, you're not going on conjecture. You're not going off of secondhand information. You're going off of facts that are in the police report. So that is the reason that we get it from law enforcement. Once I get that case, we put it in an electronic format. We scan it all, put it on a secure server, and then I send it out to my experts and give them a deadline and say, hey, you know, give me your thoughts, your opinions, what you see, you know, by a certain date. We get all that back in from all the different disciplines, and then we encompass that into one great big final report, which is given back to law enforcement for them to follow up on.
And how long does something like that usually take? I mean, maybe it depends on the case or whatever, but generally, how long would a summation by your group, how long would that take?
Usually 3 to 6 months to do a thorough and accurate review.
And you do just murder cases. You should know, Unfound is all about missing people. Of course, some of those people may be murdered. We just don't know. But you just do out-and-out murders where a body is found, or you do cases where it's a disappearance, but it's suspected that there is a murder. The body just hasn't been found.
Yeah, we do both. We do disappearances. Our very first or second case was a disappearance of two gentlemen out in, I believe, California area. So, yeah, I mean, we do it all. I mean, we're not going to do, theft of art gallery stuff.
Okay, I understand.
Missing persons or unsolved homicides.
Okay, and how many cases would you say you get submitted to you, your organization, per year? And what are the percentage? What are the odds of a case getting picked up by you? I'm going to guess that you get quite a few submissions, and you can't take all of them, I'm guessing.
Well, we get probably 4 to 6 a year. At least that's the one we take and we look at. And we have seen something, the detectives, the reviewers have seen something that the original investigator missed or overlooked in every single case. And that's why I think it's important to have a different set of eyes look at things.
Right. Right. Let's talk about this for a second. And I had this in my notes that I sent to you. How would you define a cold case? I mean, that's two words that get thrown out a lot in the missing persons community. You hear it on TV. Of course, there's shows with that name. What to you is the meaning of a cold case?
To me, a cold case is generally just a case that has no resolution to it. And what I mean by that is, let's say someone is innocent and they're in jail, or there's real doubt of whether they're guilty, but they're in jail. To me, that's still a cold case, and we'll look at those. To go with the general term that cold cases are also, you know, cases like I discussed earlier, Gail Matthews and her daughter Tamara, where that's a cold case. So basically, to me, when it's unresolved and there's still issues lingering, to me, it's a cold case.
So it doesn't like depend on like how old the case is. Like, let's say there's a case that's 5 years old and there's been no suspects have come forward, no evidence. That even though it's like 5 years old, which wouldn't be that old, it could still be considered to be a cold case. Because I think sometimes people think, well, it has to do with a certain age of case.
Right. And I don't think you can put a number on what a cold case is or not. To me, it doesn't matter if it's 3 weeks or it's 3 decades, because there's a family member somewhere who after 3 weeks believes that it's a cold case. So to them it is.
Okay. Would there be some cases out there that have been solved because of your organization that the listeners might be familiar with? A couple that, obviously you mentioned the one that got the organization started, but can you go on the record to talk about a couple cases that were solved because of your organization's help?
Well, we keep that pretty tight-lipped. The reason being is we leave that up to the agency submitted us the case. We let them do all that, to take all the credit or whatever they want to do. And we just review the cases for them.
But you can say that some of the cases that you've looked into, have there been convictions in at least a few of them?
To be honest with you, I don't know, because like I said, once we submit that, we really don't follow up on it any further, because it's on to the next case for us. We just get them back and let them, you know, do their own thing with it.
Okay. And this is a service that you provide for free, that you're all volunteers, right?
Correct. It's a pro bono service. We also have a laboratory that we use the MVAC system. It's a new way of collecting DNA, and it collects more DNA than the traditional swabbing. We use that a lot, and we do that pro bono for law enforcement too, because I know how labs are, and private labs will often take things that a state lab will not. But the private labs cost money, so the police departments might not have those resources. Well, I'm saying give it to us, and we'll do it for free. We have a partnership set up with Bode Technology, which is one of the biggest DNA labs in the country, and they work with us to do pro bono testing on evidence as well.
Wow. So you do it for free and you have volunteers. I mean, like I said before, you have some well-known people in your organization. I mean, really committed people. I think that's good for people to know that people will do that. You know, you'd think because DNA testing obviously is not cheap, and that you can get something like that done pro bono or for free obviously is a great benefit to both the police departments and the families who want you know, justice in some of these cases. In your experience regarding cold cases, what do you think it ends up being the biggest roadblock to getting some of these things solved? Is it a lack of DNA, a lack of witness? I mean, it may depend on the case, but what do you think about that? What's your impressions?
Well, sometimes it is resources, sometimes it is money, but a lot of times people have to understand when a detective gets a case, a homicide case, they work that diligently to begin with. But then once you follow up all the leads and you're not going anywhere or the tips stop coming in, that case gets pushed to the side of your desk a little bit because you still have the robberies coming in. You still have the thefts coming in. You still have all these other work that's coming in. And eventually that murder case goes from your desk into a drawer and it eventually is, you know, forgotten about. And so sometimes it's just, you know, the resources, you don't have the manpower and the crime keeps coming in. And that's the reason cases go cold. Now it's my job to go and get those cases out of the file and to get life back into them. And with the advent of all the social media stuff, podcasts, that's what we do in general. And I think that helps get these cold cases going and get solved.
How about, I mean, this would have been probably a lot more difficult for you 25 years ago before DNA, maybe before cell phones could track people, things like that. Obviously, if you're looking, maybe you have looked at some cases that go way back, I guess they have a lot less information than more recent ones, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, there's less information sometimes, but I'm here to tell you, I've looked at many cases from the 60s and 70s, and those police officers did hard work. They did what they did, use what they had at that time, whether it be plaster, castings of footprints, whether it's just hair evidence or blood typing. They still did the job, and they still did it well. And, you know, whether it was 1968 or present day, we use the same technologies as a gumshoe detective and to solve cases. Cases aren't just solved on DNA.
Yeah.
People get lazy because of that. You can't just rely on that. You still have to follow up. You got to do interviews. You have to do backgrounds, victimology checks, suspectology checks, all those things to incorporate into solving a case.
Okay. Next up, I want to talk about, you have some publications and some books. What can you tell the listeners a little bit about them? Let's start with the first one, Solving the Unsolved. What is that book about, and what can you tell listeners?
Solving the Unsolved was an ensembled cast of ASOC members who got together and wrote a chapter about maybe a significant cold case that they worked. Or like Cyril Weck wrote about, you know, his profession of pathology and important things that he does in order to solve cold cases as well. That book is, it's all pro bono, and all the money from that book goes back into the organization to help run our lab and things like that. So we try to do one of those every year or two. That was the first one. And we're working on getting another one developed, and hopefully by next year.
So what is the content of the book? So that's not about cases you've actually looked at, but just about solving cold cases in general.
Yep, it's about solving cold cases in general. A little bit of cases in there, not necessarily that our organization has worked,
okay,
but that somebody has looked at in their career, and also kind of like a how-to on some things by Mark Safarik. He did a chapter, I believe, on the elderly being targeted by serial killers and things like that. So there's different things within that book that would keep people's interest.
And people can find that book on Amazon or?
Yeah, they can find it on Amazon or Barnes & Nobles or our ASOC website, www.asoc.com.
Okay, well, I'll make sure the listeners go there. Next, I unfortunately in my notes did not write it all out, but the JCCR, how is this different from the book? What is that?
That's a academic journal that our people will put together. It basically is statistics, research, things like that. That's just like a normal publication of a journal. And we are the first of our genre, I guess, for cold cases to have such a journal.
And is that something that can be purchased, or do you subscribe to that? Or if listeners were wondering about that, how can they look at it too? What is that?
Yeah, that's on our website as well. It's up there for everyone to view. And then our newsletter, The Crucible,
right,
is just for paying members that are members of our organization.
Okay. The Crucible is a newsletter that regular people can't get, or you can sign up for it?
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Well, you'd have to be a member of ASOC. And in general, people can be general members of our organization if they want to support the cold case stuff that we do. You know, they can go onto our website.
Yeah, please tell the listeners about. Yeah, please tell them about that right now. How they could become a member, please.
Yeah, they just go to our website. It's pretty self-explanatory. There's a page on there. You fill out an application and pay our yearly dues, and you can become a general member, which gives you access to the newsletter. It also gives you discounted rates at our conferences, future workshops. And you can volunteer for the many things that we do. I mean, the cases that we take in that we have to scan, as you can imagine, sometimes that's a lot of work.
Yes.
Yes. We do outreach to victims' family members. So there's a lot of volunteer things that we can do as well.
Okay. And you mentioned the conferences. What goes on there? How often do those happen, and what would somebody see if they went to one of those?
Well, we're in having our fourth annual conference this June 25th through the 27th in St. Louis, Missouri. Our keynote speaker this year will be Warner Spitz, great guy. We'll have Dr. Catherine Ramslin presenting, Joe Kennedy, who is a cold case expert, Laura Petler. And what we do there for the first 2 days is everybody is welcome to attend. They'll see a presentation on cold cases or something related to cold cases. And on the third day, we have law enforcement that comes in and presents us with their cold cases. And usually we do probably three or four presentations that only the members of ASOC would be able to attend.
So what you're saying is the police agencies bring in these cases that are real cases that are unsolved cold cases right now, and that's what you'd be doing at the conference as well. It's more than just presentations. It's actually real world stuff as well.
Correct. But that is on the third day, and that's closed to the general public. That was just for us ASOC consulting and review board members. But the first 2 days, you'll learn all about cold cases and the people that solve them, what goes into, how you should do it, and things like that. And it's very informative.
And how would somebody get to go to one of these conferences? How do you get to go?
On our ASOC website, everything's run through that website, and you just fill out the registration, pay the fee, and show up on game day, and we'll be there to greet you.
Okay. Well, the reason I asked that, I originally lived in Las Vegas, and I know sometimes when they have like conferences in Las Vegas, it's really limited to just people like within a certain industry. Like they'll have the automotive conference, right, like SEMA or something, where only retailers, your average car buff, can't just walk in there. I guess that's what I was asking you.
We have that. That has been brought up in discussion. But I shot that down because I'll tell you why. Is, well, like I said, cold cases affect everybody, not just law enforcement. So how am I going to tell a victim's family member that they cannot attend my conference? I would never do that. Just like when they email me, I get hundreds of emails from victims' family members who want help, and I never say no to them, and I never will, because that is who you work for. That is the person. When you go to their house and you stare in their eyes and you see the grief, and they put their entire faith in you, you solve this case. And it's a great responsibility, but it's a responsibility that I embrace, and that's what I do. And so I open the conference up to everybody to come in and learn and see how the cold cases affect people.
Great. Thank you for that. And, you know, and that's probably where I was going to go next in this discussion, because, you know, I've had the opportunity in the last 6 months to probably interview about 40 different family members of people who have disappeared, and mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, you know, and children of parents who have disappeared. And I have to admit, Ken, that I hear a lot of complaints about the police. I'm just going to be honest with you. And this has to do with disappearances. Are there complaints? I know that you feel for the victims, and I know what you're doing. Do you think in some cases they do have a right to gripe? In some cases that not enough work? Okay.
Sure, absolutely, 100%. My very first cold case was a missing person. Her name was Dawn Marie Miller, and she went missing from my department that I worked in for 10 years, and I never knew that we had a missing person. I ran across her name on the Doe Network website, and it said she was missing from my department. She had been missing for 15 years, and I was floored because I worked there. I didn't know we had a missing person.
Oh, my.
So I went and asked my captain, and he didn't know. Long story short is I got the records. I asked if I could look into the case, and at the time, I was an undercover narcotics cop, so I had long hair and earrings, and I certainly didn't look like the traditional detective that would be investigating this, but I did it. And to this day, which is now, I don't know, 15 years later, I'm still in contact with Dawn Miller's mother, who absolutely is overjoyed that someone took the time to actually look for her daughter. And I got two suspects. The one hung himself shortly after I interviewed him. But she knows now who did it. She knows how it happened. And for her, that's what she wanted. And she was happy. And the police did not do a good enough job. They let it go. And I seen it firsthand.
Why? I know you can't speak for any other police department but your own, but why do you think that happens? What happens, do you think?
Well, I don't know. Because I think it's individualism. I tell a lot of people, I don't have a master's degree, but I have a PhD in determination. And I think good detectives have that. They just push further. And, you know, for me, it's the same thing. You come up to an obstacle, it's easy to just back off and go back home and let the case die. But no, we're supposed to go through that wall. We have to push through and dig deeper to solve the case. That's what we do. But not everybody's like that. And so I think that's why sometimes the cases don't get solved. There's not enough resolution, determination, or whatever you want to call it. Some people have it. Some people don't.
Yeah. What is, in your opinion, and the number one thing that we could do in the United States, not just in your department, but in law enforcement in the United States, to make the solving, or at least the coverage of cold cases better? Realistically, I mean, if we added like 100,000 more detectives, I suppose that would, but realistically, what needs to be done that can be better?
Well, that's a tough question. Because some cases are getting done by the right people, putting forth the right amount of determination and effort. But I think there needs to be more cold cases regionally throughout the United States that are dedicated on working just cold cases. Like I said, because a regular detective continues to have work coming in. But as a cold case detective, you have the luxury of not being bothered by any other crimes. You're not hampered by having to do it right now. You take your time. And I think if we had more regionalized cold case units throughout the United States, that more cold cases would get solved. And that number of 200,000 cold cases would dwindle.
That is an insane number. I mean, I know the United States is a huge country, over 300 million people here, but that's an incredible amount of cases that, you know, sit out there that are unsolved and are just sitting there.
It's disheartening, you know, but you just got to chip away with what you can do and help one family member at a time.
Right. Right. I do have to ask you, being the listeners know that I'm originally from Pennsylvania, how did ASOC end up being in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, of all places? Because I would think that when you see the name, you think, oh, this is something out of New York or LA, out where everybody just knows the little, you know, the Little League World Series. How did it end up being in Williamsport?
Well, it ended up in Williamsport because that's where I work.
Oh, okay.
You know, I work for the district attorney's office in Lycoming County, Williamsport. So it was only natural that the base run out of where I was, since I was the president and founder.
Okay. Anything else?
That's a simple answer.
Okay. It's interesting because I know I have a lot of listeners. They're going to go to your site. They're going to look you up, and then they're going to see Williamsport, and they're going to be like, wow, that's out in the hills of Pennsylvania. I've been to Williamsport. My parents have been there too for the Little League World Series. So I know that, you know, not the place you'd exactly expect to find an organization that's centered, has all these people, including yourself, impressive credentials, trying to do something like this. It's just, I guess you just wouldn't expect that. What would you like to tell the listeners before I let you go today, Ken?
A couple things. One, I would say that I have a new book coming out on some of the cold cases that I worked, and it'll be out on May 24th. It's from Wild Blue Press, and I'll have a book signing June 1st at Duquesne University at Cyril Weck Forensic Institute. And at the same time of that book signing will be done in honor of Dr. Henry Lee, who will be there and is being honored by the best in forensics. Michael Bodd and Cyril Weck will all be there. And I'll be having my book signing there. It's called The Detective. And I will chronicle about five cases in there, including my first cold case, Dawn Marie Miller. But it's also a biographical, autobiographical portrayal of how you can succeed. And to me, that's more important in life, is no matter where you start out, don't let anyone tell you that you can't accomplish it, because you can. You just go through the obstacle. You keep pushing. You keep pushing until you get where you want to be in life. And all my life, I wanted to be a detective and work on cold cases. And I'm there. So if I can do it with my upbringing and the problems that I had as a youth, anybody can do it.
And people should know, I looked up your bio on the website. You're a United States Marine.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You never, right? Once you're in the Marines, you're never an ex-Marine, right? You're always a Marine, right?
That's right.
And how many years did you serve, sir?
I served 4 years.
Okay. Oh, did you
Semper
do any
Fi.
Semper Fi? Yeah, I've never been in the military, but yes, please. Well, so you're gonna have this book signing. That book will be available on Amazon as well, and in a bookstore near everybody. Ken, thank you for being on this episode of Unfound. I deeply appreciate it.
Hey, thank you very much, and to all the family members of victims, truly heartfelt apologies and sincere. Whatever I can ever do to help any of you, please don't hesitate. I get a lot of requests, but I'll never say no.
All right. You've heard it, listeners. An excellent policeman out there, investigator, detective out there, trying to do good work for families out there. It's good to talk to you, Ken. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
And that was my interview with Detective Kenneth Maines, president and founder of ASOC, the American Investigative Society of Cold Cases. How can you not get excited for the prospect of future cold cases getting solved with a guy like that spearheading an important organization like ASOC? You just wish there were more people like Kenneth Mainz who didn't just think about doing something. Because Detective Ken did something, and he continues to do it. And not from Gotham, but from Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Once again, all the information regarding Detective Mainz and ASOC, www.aisocc.com. They have a Twitter account, at the ASOC, T-H-E-A-I-S-O-C-C. ASOC, of course, has a Facebook page I'd like you to like and follow. And Detective Mainz has a book that just came out, a new book. And it's called Unsolved No More. You can find it on Amazon and elsewhere. I would urge some of you, if not all of you, to check his new book out. And that's the program. If you found it informative, please go to iTunes and give Unfound a 5-star review. I thank you for listening. I'm Ed Densel, and you've been listening to this special episode of Unfound.